What's up, dear listener? Welcome to In the Thick. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela. And this is ITT Sound Off. And happy Juneteenth, everybody.
And I've got a little bit of a jump in my step. I don't know. Maybe it has to do with the fact that what the fuck happened with the Supreme Court? Hello?
Yeah, the first topic.
I mean, I was expecting to be so sad this week. And instead, a little bit of an opening here, because on Thursday, the Supreme Court of the United States ruled 5-4, slim but real, that the Trump administration's efforts to end the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, DACA, violated federal law. This is huge. And the argument was that the way that they tried to end it was problematic. So that's also very important, right?
Yes.
Because for 3 years, the Trump administration has been pushing to end DACA. Now, this is so beautiful. 700,000 DACA recipients can really do this. They can just exhale for a moment. They can continue to live, to work.
Yeah.
You know, there's about 27,000 of them are healthcare workers. They're essential workers during this pandemic. So on Thursday, after the decision was announced, our producer, Nicole Rothwell, sat in on a press call hosted by the immigrant youth group Make the Road New York. Beautiful title. It's called Se Hace el Camino al Andar, and their New York DACA case team.
Yeah.
So Karen Garcia is a member of Make the Road, and she's a DACA recipient from Long Island, and she had this to say.
Today, the Supreme Court ruled in favor of DACA, a victory which immigrant youth like myself and many others before us have fought decades to win. The Supreme Court rejected Trump's white supremacist agenda and help protect immigrant youth and our families from the deportation machine. This decision is extremely meaningful for me and many others who have lived with the fear of being forced from our home and our families since the day Trump decided to rescind DACA in 2017. This victory makes it clear that immigrant youth are here to stay. But we know this is not the end of our fight. The Trump administration has made it clear they want to deport as many people as possible. While the Supreme Court's decision will give needed relief for hundreds of thousands of immigrant youth, we must remember that DACA didn't protect everyone in our community. Black immigrants especially are much more likely to be deported than non-Black immigrants because of disproportionate policing and incarceration. While fighting anti-Blackness and systemic racism requires all of us to commit to action that brings about change, white supremacist politicians like Trump and Republicans who continue to support him bear great responsibility over the attacks on Black people, Black immigrants, and our immigrant community as a whole. We demand DACA renewals and new applications to be accepted immediately, and the Trump administration to leave DACA in place. We demand permanent protections. Our home is here, and our fight is not over.
You know, there were some people, Julio, who were just on edge.
Yeah.
And I think she captures that kind of tense elation, happiness, but also a little bit of trepidation, right?
Yeah. And the connection with the movement that is happening, the movement for Black lives. You know, one of the things, Maria, I had a chance to talk to Julio Salgado, the amazing undocumented artist that we did on Latino Rebels Radio Live the day the decision made. And Julio said to me that DACA was a product of direct action. That's what Julio Salgado was saying. That people tend to forget in 2011, 2012, that undocumented youth literally came out and said, we are undocumented and unafraid. And we, President Obama, we're here and we're not leaving. And people, you know, they did direct actions on Democratic, you know, offices, on Republican offices.
And his
Obama,
campaign
on
re-election,
his, right?
Yeah, and his
Remember?
Campaign re-election office in Denver, where these young people, you know, put their bodies on the line.
Exactly. My point being is like what Julio told me, and it really hit me, because there's a lot of people that I know who are relieved, who are celebrating, who understand that this could change, but it's, you know, it's a very small window from June to November, election day. So who knows what happens? And if he does get challenged again, you know, people are feeling like if Trump loses, then maybe this survives, right? But the point being is that this all came from organizing. This wasn't Barack Obama saying, hey, no, I feel your pain, guys. Let me do something for you. And they are making the connection to what's happening in the moment right now.
Exactly. We have to shout that out, right? That you do not have to be a citizen to create democratic change in this country, right? They were doing that and they were undocumented young people. And, you know, just this morning, on Friday morning, as we're recording this, Janet Napolitano was on MSNBC and saying, we created the DACA program because we believed in the blah, blah, blah. And we did. And it's like,
I'm sorry.
Yo, hello.
Yeah.
You, from the very beginning, when immigrant rights activists understood that Barack Obama was not going to make them his priority,
right,
they were saying, then create executive action, create executive action,
exactly,
create executive action, create executive action if you're not going to do legislation. And what did he say? Constitutional lawyer, expert, scholar said, I can't.
Right.
Until people forced him to do it. I also want to just say, again, I keep on talking about the mental health of our documented young people, which is, you know, you can exhale a little bit, but also let us not be fooled.
Right.
One, DACA young people who are not so young anymore have been deported with DACA throughout this entire time, even under Obama. So let's not forget that.
It's not
that.
Permanent
it
protection.
Is not permanent protection.
It's deferred protection.
Exacto. I was never a big supporter of this because you need comprehensive overhaul immigration reform, not this kind of piecemeal. And also, if you have DACA, you have to remain a perfect person.
Exactly.
You can never be caught walking down the street with a joint in your hand. You can't have just one too many beers or suddenly be in a park with a beer. You have to be perfect. And immigrants who we were just not born in this country doesn't mean that we have to be perfect. On the other hand, I'm so happy. I'm celebrating.
Yeah, to all our
congratulations.
DACA, all our documented fans out there, take a moment to enjoy this moment. And it's definitely well earned. So moving on to our second topic. This is an update to the coronavirus pandemic, which we're still in the midst of, and it's still killing hundreds of lives a day in this country. So some 20 states are seeing an increase of cases. There are record high spikes in Arizona, Florida, Nevada, Oregon, Texas, and Oklahoma. And that's according to data from Johns Hopkins. And Dr. Anthony Fauci, he's still around. He said this. This is what he said this week. I'm going to see if I can do a Brooklyn accent here. We're still in a first wave. It wasn't that good, but you know what I'm saying. We're still in a first wave. Yet this weekend, President Trump is going to hold his first indoor rally, indoor, during this pandemic in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And he's going to make the attendees sign waivers that can't blame his campaign if they get sick.
You know, imagine if we had a federal policy, right? We wouldn't be having this. But because of the fact that Trump has let it happen, each state does what it wants to do, he's going to Oklahoma. And I want to remind people, right, that Trump initially scheduled this rally for today, which is Juneteenth.
Yeah.
In the place where the 1921 Tulsa race massacre took place. It was one of the worst incidents of racial violence in this country's history. Trump, you know, so he moves the day. Anybody who says, oh, they didn't know. They didn't know what they were doing. It was just coincidence. No, por favor. They knew exactly what they were doing. It's still the Juneteenth weekend celebration, and it's still in a pandemic.
Right, and it's still happening in Juneteenth in the time of a global movement uprising, the movement for Black Lives, right? But the pandemic, right? If you look at these states that are having an increasing number of cases, a lot of these places had reopened quickly before the national uprising happened. So meanwhile, cities that have had major protests are so far not seeing spikes in cases. So officials and health experts point to the conditions that have made this possible, that the protests were outdoors and that the majority of protesters wore masks. Of course, we say this with caution, since many protesters were younger and not necessarily of the group that's at risk for COVID-19. Plus, it's still early. So I'm not, you know what I'm saying? Like, do not mince my words here, people. And, you know, who knows what's going to happen? We're not minimizing the risks that come with protesting, but we're just pointing out the evidence we have seen so far Maria.
Yeah.
What do you think about all this? Because we're both in the Northeast and I feel like this is becoming Hunger Games and we're the region that kind of is I mean, I was just out this morning riding my bike and everyone had masks. You know, people were running. And then as we passed each other, people would just put their masks up.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I had my face covering. I was riding my bike and I would just put it down after I would pass someone.
Mm-hmm.
So there's behavior, at least where I see it. I'm just curious about what you think.
Ooh, sweetie. We've been doing that in New York for like 3 months now, basically. Like that is the norm
now.
Same
Massachusetts. Yeah.
That is the norm now. For me, I don't know, Julio, it's a little bit strange because New York just opened, you know, and so we're slightly opening. And so now we are not having that 7 o'clock applause and it feels a little bit sad. But at the same time, you know, the fact that deaths in New York are down to like below 50.
Mm.
And then I'm looking at these states and I'm seeing people that are just, you know, pretending like there's nothing going on.
Right.
You talk about the Hunger Games and this whole notion that states are going to start fighting against states, right? And that how does that look, you know, in terms of the next racial element here? Because there is, I want to quote something that the work of Ashish Jha, who is the director of Harvard Global Health Institute and incoming dean of the Brown University School of Public Health, put it this way in his recent op-ed in The Guardian. If we are to confront systemic racism, such mass demonstrations seem essential to use our new pandemic lexicon, which is really interesting. So this is what systemic racism looks like. But at the same time, I have to say, Julio, I did run into a demonstration, 110th Street, Central Park North. And I have to say, almost everyone, actually, I have to say everyone, except for when they were taking it down momentarily, was wearing a mask. And so, again, I just think that this is a moment when what happens if we actually learn that we can protest?
Right.
On the other hand, I'm very concerned because I am still getting calls and emails and texts from people saying, oh, my God, my aunt. My uncle is sick now. Oh, my God. In Puerto Rico, 3 people just. No. O sea, for me, this pandemic and death has not left. It has not stopped. The sadness is still with me.
Yeah, here's the thing. People were saying this. States that reopen too early, we're going to see a spike in cases. And the evidence is there. And it's disproportionately impacting Black and Brown communities. And wake up, people. Just wake up.
All right, so our final topic is an update on the movement to defend Black lives and honoring Juneteenth, which is today, Friday, June 19th, 2020. You know, we are living through an extraordinary moment in history, right?
Yes.
And we hear it in the thick, like to celebrate as much as we want to focus on what needs to change. But there is progress in terms of defunding the police in some cities. San Francisco police are now banned from using chemical weapons. You know, people call that tear gas. Mm-hmm. It's chemical weapons. And the Capitol Hill occupied zone in Seattle, still going strong. By the way, they're like, we love it here. We're safe. We're playing ball. The kids are playing in the street. Like, we're like, cool.
We're cool. We're chill.
You know, we're cool. We're fine. There are corporations that are making changes from the recognition of the racist roots of Aunt Jemima. Hello. To NASCAR banning the Confederate flag from its events. I mean, these are not revelations. It's not like we didn't know this, but it does feel, Julio, and it's up to all of us to make sure that this is not just a snapshot and a moment, but rather really momentum for systemic change.
Right. And like you mentioned, today is Juneteenth. So Amanda Alcantara from our Futuro Media family, she shared with us a little bit about what she's feeling today and what Juneteenth means to her.
Hi, everyone. This is Amanda Alcantara, and I'm so excited to be on today's In the Thick Sound Off, especially on this special day, Juneteenth, and Juneteenth 2020, which is a day that has seen the fight for Black lives become revitalized after these horrific videos have resurfaced. I feel like it's a year when people have woken up again in the midst of a pandemic, and I would say because of the pandemic and because of how we've seen officials treat communities of color during these times, Juneteenth is the day when slavery officially ended in the United States. And to me, today, I'm really reflecting on the legacy that African Americans built in this country. So my ancestors are not from North America. They are from the Caribbean. And yet, generations later, I'm reminded of how our struggles are connected because I get to live out the legacy of African Americans in the U.S., a legacy that they built that made it safer for Black immigrant communities to be here, whether that be ending slavery or the civil rights movement. Today is really a day for celebration. At least for me, it's a day for celebration, and it is a day to remember the fight that our ancestors waged for our freedom. And we still have a long way to go. So I'm thinking about my ancestors in the Caribbean. In Puerto Rico, the very first slave rebellion of the entire continent of the Americas happened in 1514. I'm thinking of names like Lemba Calembo, who led a slave rebellion in Dominican Republic, the territory that is today Dominican Republic. And I feel like there's this quote that has been going around that we are our ancestors' wildest dreams. And sometimes I feel like that's not necessarily true because we are still not free. And yet we are also free in ways in which they weren't, you know. And that's important to remember. It's important to remember and to honor that. Oh, I'm getting emotional. It's important to remember and to honor that and to really just sit with what can we do today with the tools that they gave us, right? The tool to not be in slavery, the tool to have the right to read, the tool to have the right to love ourselves and to know that we are worthy and complete people. What can we do with these tools to now fight for future generations?
Mm. Oh, Amanda. I am so lucky I get to work with you every day. Thank you so much for sharing. And all of us at Futuro, truly, like, we all love you. Boop. And this year, actually, there's more corporations, politicians, and advocates. They're pushing for Juneteenth to become a federally recognized holiday. And in the meantime, this year, all the Juneteenth celebrations or commemorations, they're going to be marked with a deep reflection and ongoing protest to defend Black lives.
Exacto.
Yeah.
But because of their power and their resistance and their ancestral guides, they are a central part of who we are right now. So thank you. Thank you.
Juneteenth is actually a day of not only commemoration, but I think a day to acknowledge power and resistance and uplifting and transformation. And we're seeing it right now, right? We're seeing it. We're witnessing this.
It's a beautiful thing.
And Juneteenth becoming a federal holiday, if that's where this goes.
Hello.
Wow. Wow.
Beautiful.
Listen, I kind of like this tradition of us on Friday just ending it with a little bit of joy.
Okay.
So do you have any joy this week that you want to share with our listeners?
Well, since you told me that you don't want me talking about nature anymore or talking about the turtles in my Harlem Park, but watch The Good Fight. It is the great political TV show. It's like the next thing after The Good Wife.
Your Honor, the issue here is not intellectual property and just compensation. This is a larger issue, one that speaks to the heart of our country. Every vote counts. And therefore, every vote must be counted. If the people cannot trust that their votes will be counted, how can they trust the rights that flow from those votes? If our votes are subverted or discarded or even ignored, why have faith in our democratic institutions? Why respect a president, any president, even one from our own party? Why not choose violent overthrow if our votes are not counted?
That's all I'm going to say. It's okay. So radical political, you will freak out.
You want to hear my joy? I don't know if I've said this already.
Tell me.
If I did, I'm going to repeat it again because I am so obsessed.
Uh-oh.
Okay. Let me see if I can. Let me see if you can guess what it is. Ready? All
right, music.
Ready? Cuando calienta el sol.
Camilo Sesto.
No, Luis Miguel, the series on Netflix.
Oh, wait.
I'm all over it. Yeah, oh, my God. It's the biggest escape.
Great series. Great, great series. Watch it for sure. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela.
Uno, dos, tres.
And that's how we roll. You just never know. From Turtles to Luis Miguel.
Cuando
you know.
Calienta el sol.
Okay, remember, sorry. Dear listener, go to Apple Podcasts to rate and review us. I'm so glad that we're happy. It's good.
Yeah.
Also, remember, you can listen to In the Thick on Pandora, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Make us laugh. At In the Thick Show, like us on Facebook and tell your friends and family. In the Thick is produced by a very patient and loving Nicole Rothwell Noor Saudi and our New York Women's Foundation Ignite fellow Harsha Nahata. Our audio engineers are Stephanie LeBeau, Julie Caruso, and Leah Shaw. Our digital editor is Luis Luna. Our intern is Ariel Goodman. Thanks to Raul Perez for recording me. The music you heard is courtesy of Nacional Captain ZZK Records. See you next time, dear listener. We love you. Bye.
Ahora te puedes marchar. Okay, bye. Can I just get out Legally Blonde before we start then? The opening of Legally Blonde. I'm sorry, listening to the song. Because it goes, oh my God, you guys. All right, I'm good. I'm good. I got it out. It's the opening track of Legally Blonde, the hit Broadway musical.
First of all, the fact that you're talking about the musical and not even the movie is my favorite thing.
I am so deep cutting this. And Maria's what are you talking about?
Oh, I know something from that movie. ¿Cómo es? Bend and twitch. Bend and qué?
Snap.
Bend, snap, bend and snap. Bend?
Raul, snap. Okay.
Raul, snap.
Mom, it's snap. I've told you so many freaking times. Let's go.
The opinions expressed by the guests and contributors in this podcast are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of Futuro Media or its employees.